Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and this is Jonathan Starkey, your favorite digital pub landlord in this digital pub called Cheshire Mantis. And we're in the bar this evening, and all we want is just a quick introduction. Do you understand? Nothing about Christmas, just a quick introduction, okay? And I will call you Raven. Go ahead, Raven, say hello.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello, Cheshire. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine and started your Christmas shopping.
Oh, has to do it, doesn't he? Just to annoy. Okay, Gazelle. Mr. Trevor Nichols, go ahead, sir.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Ah, that's a perfect example of an introduction there. Stats, go ahead. How's it going, kid?
All right, thanks, yeah. Good evening.
Good evening to you. All right, and to the doctor in the house. Are you there?
I am, Jonathan, and good day to all our listeners, wherever you are.
See, he is exactly like Steve. Did you see that? He's exactly the same.
Just called being welcoming.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, lots happening in the news again. Here's the roundup of what's been going on. Ofcom clears Piers Morgan and GMB over Meghan and Harry's opera show. Now, everybody remembers what happened there.
Oh, yes.
No? And then he left. So there's been calls for him to come back to the show. But they were deafened by the people that didn't want him back on the show.
He'll be back.
Anyway, anti-vax mob clashes with police at Canary Wharf. Now, you've been saying this, Stats. No GB News return for Andrew Neil.
Half, yes.
And it doesn't look like he is coming back. But Isabel Oakeshott joins. No, a betrayal of the NHS. And CWAC discloses how many Afghan refugees, it will resettle. How about that? Well, that'll be interesting to talk about and where the money's coming from. Prince Charles, closest aide, quits after cash for favours scandal. And Prince Charles said he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, of course not.
And Roy Chubby Brown, fans blast woke decision of Sheffield, and I can't remember who it was at Sheffield, to actually pull the gigs on it.
I think it was the council.
The council?
Yeah.
Okay. And Rees-Mogg, one of our favourite people, fires a warning shot over the national insurance hike to fund social care. Well, didn't really do much good, did it? Anyway, we're going to move on. And the first story, the first national story that we're going to move with is the government U-turns, not following the science, and freedom becomes tyranny. This is with Stats. Go ahead, Stats.
Thank you very much, sir. Yeah, this week I'd like to discuss the government's perpetual U-turns, broken manifesto promises, or as many people are calling them, lies. So
they're not allowed to call. Did you see that in Parliament? They're not allowed to call each other liars.
I know,
because it's not really a good start for debate.
Well,
so what do you have to say? Do you have to say, I do not believe he's telling the truth?
I think someone should come out and say, no, I'm not lying, and this is why, and then have a debate.
That's right. That's what I think should happen as well. Go ahead.
Does it? Yeah, so first we were repeatedly told there will be no vaccine passports. Now, witnessing the mess in France, they are set to go ahead at the end of the month, according to reports. We were also told that once the vulnerable were protected, we'd have our lives back. But now we see them considering jabbing children, even though the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, the JCVI, decided against backing a national rollout on health grounds alone because the virus presents a low risk to younger teenagers, with one of their professors even warning about some of the findings coming out of Israel regarding heart inflammation, which we think we touched on, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago?
We did.
And now we see the tyrants want to renew the lockdown legislation after they announced the roadmap to freedom. And a council tax rise now, it was the national insurance rise.
That's
the
national
taxes
insurance
gone back on, which was a manifesto promise broken, which they had great glee in shouting about in Parliament today. So, well, I think let's discuss this.
Okay. Well, if we're going to discuss this in a parliamentary way, as always, shall we give way to the first one who wants to actually speak on that? And I think we'll give way to the Gazelle. Go ahead, sir.
No, sorry, Jonathan, I was scratching my head.
Have you got any splinters, sir?
No.
Okay, well, we're going to give way then to the Raven.
Yes, good evening. And I think this is quite serious. Basically, we're seeing further rises in the effects of people's incomes, many working people. How much more of a burden can ordinary working people take, given all across the country, not only, you know, we're talking about the national insurance rise here, but we're seeing council tax rises. We're seeing parking charges everywhere you go. It's almost as though your hand is never out of your pocket. And clearly, especially with socialist councils, are pretty good at this. But this is now the remit of the whole country, irrespective of politics. People are getting fed up with this. But I'm going to bring something to the fore here. And I came across an article which I found quite shocking. We're talking about the burden of tax paying for public services, social care, and all the other things that we need and enjoy in our country. There's an article which has come to light, which is in the past week, indicating that the Office for National Statistics have done a survey, and it shows that of the 13 million Brits who are not looking for work, over half said they were not doing so because they did not want to work. This is a government survey, which is indicating 7 million people are not actively looking for work purely because they don't want to.
Do you think they got too used to things during COVID? Do you think there's a relationship there?
I don't know whether that's a key factor or, you know, that's kind of furthered this way of thinking. But my point is, you know, this is roughly 25% of the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, how much of a burden do the ordinary working people of this country have to take on board? They're caught in the middle. You've got people now being acknowledged by government sources through surveys that they are stating there's a huge swathe of people who don't want to work. And by the way, I have to emphasise here, this is people who are eligible to work. We are not talking here, apparently, about people with genuine needs with which nobody has issue. And I'm going to come back to that in a little bit, if I may. But the point is this. The ordinary working people of this country are caught in the middle. They have to pay for all the public services, all of the benefit system, the health service, everything. And at the top end, you've got the politicians, you've got the corporates, you've got the big tech giants avoiding billions of pounds of tax. And the brunt of paying for everything in this country lands at the feet of ordinary people who get up at all sorts of hours of day and night and go and do ordinary jobs, quite often for low wages, and get hammered for doing so.
Go ahead, Trevor.
Is there any age breakdown on that, Steve, or is it just that's a general across the board?
I don't think it goes into excessive detail, but I'm going to bring to the fore in a local article a little bit of a connection with this, actually, because I've got some unemployment figures for a local article later on, so I'll bring that into the fore.
Okay, well, it's strange you should say that. Dr. Hankinson, do you want to come in on anything there, what we're talking about?
You mentioned the national insurance rise. Was it 1.25%?
That's right. It was rumoured. The rumours were 1%, but it has gone up 1.25%.
Yeah, I heard this Tory MP, didn't catch the name on the radio, coming on. He was obviously very enthusiastic to try and justify it. He said, well, you know, it's only 1.25% and it's beneficial for the country because the employers will also pay more national insurance. And, you know, I think to myself, the extent to which 1.25% national insurance is going to be quite stinging for the working guy that was just mentioned, and how they can try and palm it off as, you know, very beneficial because of large corporates paying extra money. Yes, it's pretty disgraceful. I appreciate they have to do it. There's practicalities involved with this. But, of course, an election promise broken. There we go.
Well, the thing is that also that money, which is basically a grab, is a separate tax. Now, there's the link to the story that we put in about the green waste tax being a separate tax. And it is treated as a separate tax. And also, I don't know whether you know this or not, but we are actually going to be giving more money to Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales, to the tune of 300 million more than what they actually contribute to the economy. So that is, again, another argument that England is subsidising the rest of the country. Now, we don't understand the thinking behind that, but that is it. And the Conservatives seem quite proud of that. And they're saying to the Scots, well, you know, you're going to get more money for your health service. What about what's going on here in this country?
I just want to mention that they make it sound a very small rise when they simply say, you know, like Colin has said, it's only a 1.25% rise. Well, it isn't, because people are being hit left, right and centre with additional bolt-on charges, with the council tax. Mm. I mean, how many taxes? I don't sit down and actually sit down and analyse all of the taxes and charges that you pay as you go through the day for your fuel, for your car, your road tax, your parking, which you now pay everywhere you go. Every time you get out of your car, you've seemingly got to pay a charge. This country is in complete shambles and disarray because people are just paying through their nose to live here.
And Boris admits that he can't rule out more hikes after imposing the highest ever tax burden in peacetime, UK.
Oh.
So it is bad news, and I can understand your perception there about what's going on. I think the Conservatives have lost their way, because there was a quote from a guy who said, and I'll give way, Mark, go ahead. I'll give way, go ahead.
You can do the quotes, because I was going to kind of say similar to the quote, but...
Well, say it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think the mess Steve's on about is because we've got a government who are out of control.
Yeah.
They clearly don't know what they're doing. They're coercing people. And today it seemed like they took great pleasure in breaking that manifesto promise. And obviously they blame... COVID was the excuse, but there is other countries who didn't have severe lockdowns as us and are in a better position with COVID and didn't destroy their economies. So it was the measures they put in what have destroyed the country. I just think, like John said, the Conservatives aren't Conservatives anymore. Labour are a woke joke. It's really worrying. We've got no opposition to all this. It's not good. We need decent opposition. We haven't got one.
The Libs, are,
you see.
The Liberals are irrelevant.
That's why I didn't mention them.
Very good. And the Greens, well...
They're sitting in the park gazing at the sky.
Yeah. No, they're too busy.
My mum always told me to eat the greens.
I mean, yeah. I'll be honest.
Well, you're the gazelle, so you do munch on the greens.
Oh, yeah, of course I do.
Of course you do.
Yes, if we'd left there, if we had a Labour government, we'd still be in lockdown now, and we'd have even bigger tax rises coming to pay for it all.
Well, the biggest laugh during today was, and we'll bring that point of the conversation to a close on that, the biggest laugh today was Matt Hancock getting up and speaking in Parliament. And he was ridiculed because, as he speaks from the back benches, to insist Britons deserve dignity under social care reform weeks after walking out on his wife over a secret affair. He was just being ridiculed in Parliament. I mean, it was great. I liked it. Go ahead, Mark. Final slide.
You just couldn't make this up, could you?
No, it is a joke.
I'd just like to think, I think it's time for a real political awakening now.
Yes.
For the people. I think we've had enough. It's got to change.
Yeah, there needs to be some form of a reset.
Well, one of the things that we have emphasised throughout these podcasts for the past near year is that we need to see a return to traditional values. And unless we do that, we're going to continue down the road of, you know, where the hell are we going? It's a complete mess.
Well, I have to say, we're moving on, and it is with the Raven, who is going to talk about the unemployment situation in Cheshire West and Chester. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is interesting. It kind of follows on from what we were talking about a little bit earlier. And there's some figures come out, actually, and it says the number of people claiming unemployment benefits in Cheshire has rocketed by more than 60% since the start of the pandemic. There's an element to this report which I find absolutely infuriating. And part of what they're saying is, you know, the problem is down to the mentioning Brexit. Now, I'd like to apologise for Brexit. And the reason is this. This is a little bit sarcastic.
Sorry, you want to apologise?
I think this is going to be sarcastic.
No,
I
hope it is. Listen to the man. Let him finish.
Oh, this is sarcasm to the full.
Oh, right, okay. I'll take it back. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him.
Right. It says here, figures revealed that as of the end of June, there were 8,805 unemployed residents claiming benefit, a 63.66% increase on pre-pandemic levels. Now, they're talking about various issues here, but the report said the combined impact of the pandemic and Brexit has had a significant negative impact on employment generally. Now, the figure currently for unemployment in this area is just under 9,000. But then it goes on to say, it said there are currently more than 26,000 unfilled vacancies across Cheshire and Warrington, and that there was a mismatch between the people who are unemployed and the vacancies that exist. So I'd like to apologise for Brexit for creating too many jobs with too many job rises and too much opportunity in the country. And clearly we had the wrong plan.
Very good. Very good. I like that. Go ahead, Mark.
So let me get this right. We have 26,000 vacancies, yeah?
Unfilled.
Right. That is a bit odd, because I remember discussing Cheshire West and Chester's plan to retrain people who'd lost their jobs during COVID, using these digital hubs to find people and get them new skills and new vacancies. And the council actually said in their Stronger Futures plan, and I'll quote it, "We will improve our digital advice, support and guidance. Working through the digital skills partnership, we will work with businesses and training providers to develop the skills of the current and future workforces to enable them to take full advantage of digital technologies." I'd just suggest the council put their efforts into getting people off furlough, off the backside and benefits, and get them into the jobs that need filling now.
Well, it's all going to be ending by the end of September anyway.
I've just got another one. I see Ellesmere Port has almost as many unemployed as Chester. Chester's a city. Ellesmere Port's a town. This is really worrying,
It's 2,500 in Chester
it's only
unemployed.
A couple of hundred, a few hundred difference.
And it's 2,100 in Ellesmere Port.
I think we're waiting for this hub to be built, then, are we, until we can get people into jobs.
Okay.
And I think the priorities are all wrong again.
Can I get Colin in there? Go ahead, Colin.
Just a quick one. You mentioned Ellesmere Port being a town and Chester being a city. Appreciate that. What about the population of each? I mean, Chester's population's only about 100,000, isn't it? Something like that, maybe even less.
Well, Ellesmere Port's only 65,000, 67,000.
Okay, but there's not.
Yeah, you've got nearly 40% more population in Chester.
Is it as high as that? So yeah. We're just saying city and town. You know, you think city huge, towns small, but Chester's quite small, really, for a city.
Yeah, go ahead.
Still, that's.
Well, Warrington at the moment's over 200,000.
Yep.
Wow. I didn't realise that was so big.
Yep.
It's growing massively.
And there are so many gazelles popping about in those parks, I can't begin to tell you.
All over the place.
Go ahead, Steve. He's got it. Do you know, ladies and gentlemen, he has his pen out, and when he wants to speak, he holds his pen out. It would be great, you know, to do that. I just hope it doesn't turn into a weapon.
I'll bring my Viking swords next week.
Looks like the Statue of Liberty for me.
I know.
I just want to say something very important here, actually. We don't want to sort of come across as having a go at people who are unemployed who have genuine needs. And I'm going to say something here. It's very important. I know people who have gone through some traumatic times with their health and have battled very serious mental health issues. And I do know some people. I'm not going to say who. It would be wrong to do so. But I know a couple of people who've come out of the right side of it and are doing very well. And one...
And he's living at number 10. God, Boris.
Well, Jeff Bezos or whatever his name is.
But I know two people. One is now doing very well, pursuing setting up his own business. And I know another one, a lady, who, having gone through a period of mental health, is now going to university to study to become a mental health nurse. So the point I'm making here is you can turn your life around, but when there's opportunity and you're fit and able, you should be grasping it and running with it, because this country is currently awash with opportunity.
Well, I just want to bring up a quick point about the Afghan refugees, because Cheshire West have revealed how many families it plans to resettle locally. And it is envisaged that under the locally employed staff relocation scheme, they're going to take in six families. Now, normally an Afghan family would be anywhere between four and seven people.
So the figure I got was something between 6 to 11, something like that.
Okay. Well, not a huge difference there. But the authority has said that bringing them in, they're going to ensure that the first families can be accommodated and supported whilst being manageable and financially viable for the council to do so. So they're bringing them in, they're going to house them. And I've got nothing against these people. They're leaving a country where they could have been killed by the Taliban. because they were actually working with the British. Simple as that. But the government are actually dangling quite a bit of money for these people to be housed. So I'm going to give way on that point to Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Have we got all our people, or everyone who from Britain out of Afghanistan yet? Yeah, because no. I know there's still Americans there. There's an American politician who actually went to rescue them, a family himself, legend. I'm just thinking maybe we need to finish the job properly. I mean, Boris is hailing this amazing withdrawal. And he didn't get a choice in any of this. It was a retreat. It was a runaway, not a withdrawal.
I have to add that the LES funding, which is the locally employed staff funding from government, lasts for 12 months. So they have to actually start either paying their way through employment or they're actually going to be claiming benefits. So they will have access to all the same benefits that we do in this country.
Oh, so getting nothing then?
Well...
That's been my experience, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, these are some of the questions that we can ask Karen Shaw when we get her onto the programme, because Karen Shaw is the commentator on that story. So that'll be interesting. Sorry, interesting. And we will be interested in asking her questions about what she's doing. So we're going to move on now, and we're going to go to The Psychology of Populism Part 2. And did you send the digital exam papers, Dr. C? multiple choice. You know, in Steve's case, you just put one answer on one question and one answer on his paper, so he can just tick the one answer.
I got the hint, Jonathan. I got the hint. I've changed things slightly for this week. Instead of me monologuing for 5 minutes, I'm just going to do.
Well, you mean like Steve?
A very short introduction. Then we'll open it up to a good old discussion.
Great. Go ahead.
I think it's interesting because we started to talk about politicians and lies, which I know seems to be like an undercurrent that we always banter around with politicians. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a drift, and I think it's linked to populism, both left and right versions of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I come from a generation where the politicians were very careful not to be caught lying. You know, they were very economical with the truth and they were very precise with the words and, you know, lied by omission and so forth. But I think the disturbing thing is how overt lying has become almost acceptable. I mean,
we're experiencing it in so many different ways in Parliament.
Yeah, yeah. I got some stuff here. I'll just do this brief intro, then we'll just
open it up.
So this is Populism and the Power of Lies is the sort of subhead for this one.
Go ahead.
The journalist H.L. Mencken once wrote, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. The fears may be irrational, but politics is fueled by emotions, not logic. It's an art, not a science. The exaggeration of risk, therefore, is a cunning political tool to be used and abused." Now, if you think about Donald Trump's routine lying about everything from election fraud to the weather, Boris Johnson's fictitious £350 million a week for the NHS, and Jeremy Corbyn's vow to protect the NHS from being privatized to US corporates by a Johnson government.
Yeah.
You know, and we could go on and point out these things. And, you know, so there's this drift, it seems to me, from at least making the effort to be careful to, you know, overt, blatant lies. I mean, one view of that is that the, you know, populist leader is strong and charismatic and breaks these elitist norms by lying passionately because he's so committed to the people. You know, that's one sort of view. But basically, it's overt lying. So, interesting idea. Populism is almost legitimating lying.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so that's the statement. I mean, I'll open up on that. I'll turn around and say that we are experiencing lies on a daily basis, in Parliament, because, you know, we have that expression, you know, within this program when we do editorials, who is shaking the jar? And sometimes it's very difficult to define who is the biggest liar. It's as simple as that, because some of them, you would actually get to the point where you say, well, they're actually not even bothered to lie convincingly. they're just going ahead and doing it because they get a YouGov poll to back up their feelings and what they're going to do, and that's it, and they go with it. I'm going to give way to the Raven, who is desperate. His pen is going everywhere. Everywhere. Go ahead.
I just want to say, actually, is this culture in British politics merely a reflection of, you know, standards in British life? You know, we've talked endlessly about a return to standards, traditional ways of doing things and values, morals and ethics. Actually, your personal conduct, your character, your integrity. And that's exactly what I think we need to return to in this country. And it should be emulated. It should be shown from political leaders and leaders across this country.
Okay, Dr. C.
Very good point. I think the reality is you can't separate politics from culture, politics from society. They're very interactive. They sort of make each other. And there's an old saying, I can't quite remember who said it. It goes something like, a people get the leaders they deserve. I think the implication of that is that we are exactly where we are because of the state of development of politics in our culture. Yeah. And populism, of course, is going through a sort of global Western heyday at the moment. So it's, you know, a dominant force. But the interesting thing is, what's behind that dominant force? We're talking now about the power of lies.
We're moving on to Woke the Plank, and this is with Trevor the Gazelle. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, it's my turn for a bit of woke this week. Yeah, you're going to love this one.
Go ahead.
White NHS staff are told to study their privilege.
Ooh.
And that they should feel uncomfortable by a website that trains workers for its senior roles. Anti-racism guidance shared for white people working for the NHS is in a new blog. The NHS Leadership Academy advises senior staff to read articles on white privilege, and prepare themselves for a political conversation at work and work on their empathy.
I don't think Dr. C would like this. I don't think
no,
he would.
In five new tips published by, I think her name's Ashine Benjamin, the head of the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, white members of staff are told that they should not be defensive and that ignorance isn't an excuse. Now, some MPs have slammed the advice as typical woke nonsense. I totally agree with that. Ms. Benjamin goes further to say, work on your empathy. Visualise yourself in another person's shoes. Don't say I'm not political to excuse yourself from this conversation. Right now, ignorance isn't an excuse. You can't unsee what you have already seen. Where are we going with all this?
Listen, somebody, they haven't actually, not everybody has actually witnessed that type of thing. And also, it's very divisive. It sets people against people.
Yes.
You know, straight away. Go ahead, Mark.
It's this race socialism.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm doing a bit of research into schools and I'll come apparent why, but there's a lot of schools in this area and across the country racially and religiously profile the children and by gender too.
Okay, can we go to our resident psychologist?
it needs to end.
Dr. Hankinson, what do you think of something like that? Do you think it's a retrograde step for people to be saying these things to people in employment at the NHS?
Linking it back to populism again, it's a classic example of left-wing populism and their movements. It's totally expected to be done, whether it's right or not.
I mean, they're telling people that.
I don't think it is particularly right.
Yeah.
It's not something that I would absolutely approve of.
So you wouldn't advocate.
I can see in the present climate why that sort of thing needs to be done.
Okay, you can see why it needs to be done, but I don't think that these are the people to do it, though. I mean, it's wrong. Go ahead, Mark.
Can I ask why it needs to be done?
Yeah, why does it need to be done? Why do you think, Colin?
Because we have a polarised society. We have polarised politics and so forth. You know, wokeism is the left. That's pushing hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the right is pushing back against it. So it needs to be done because we are where we are in our political dynamic.
Oh, so you're talking about from a point of view of balancing the system?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I get it. But I don't agree with it. And I think this woman should shut up. And I agree with the MPs on this one that wow. she should be not funded. In fact, she should be defunded.
They're the racists.
Yeah, they're the racists.
They're the ones
I would agree with that.
Babble on about it 24/7.
Right, well, we're going to move on. Now, the other story that I have here is that Roy Chubby Brown is cancelled. He's cancelled. The fans blast woke decision of Sheffield, I think it was Sheffield Council, yeah, I think you was, mentioned yeah, in the beginning, yeah, yeah. To cancel a gig by the comment because it doesn't fit with the city's values. As more than 20,000 people signed petition to get the ban lifted. Now, that was from a story in the Mail Online. Now, the point I'm going to make about this is, who are Sheffield Council to decide what can and what cannot be presented in their theatres?
Again, more local councils just looking for an opportunity to interfere with our lives.
Steve?
Control them.
Well, I'd just like to ask, does the council, you know, seeking to ban this individual, do they have a committee where they decide what is funny and what is not and what is acceptable and not, what
faceless.
Is
not? Nothing's funny to them, is it? This is the problem.
Faceless. Go ahead, Dr. C.
Gone.
Dr. C.
I think it's a dangerous time when a society or council starts to ban and block art. People know the type of humour that Chubby Brown, you know, type of humour he does. If you don't like it, don't go.
That's it, exactly.
It shouldn't exactly, yeah. It shouldn't be
switch
banned.
It off.
And if you're watching something, turn it off if you don't like
watch
it. Simple.
Exactly. Just watch something.
I think it's just the council playing politics again. Well, the reality is leave art alone.
The MP for Sheffield, Brightside and Hillsborough, Jill Furness, welcomed the pulling of the show, saying it was the right thing to do. Well, I don't think that she's going to be going down too well, and I think there's going to be a lot of people thinking very carefully about how they're going to vote at the next election. Go ahead, Trev.
It's just another case of the completely out of touch.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mark?
I mean, they're going on about stuff he said in the past. Why don't they just go and watch his show now and see if they get offended? Because at the end of the day, they're taking offence. His material isn't offensive. You choose to take offence.
That's right.
So if it offends you, guess what? Don't listen to it.
Exactly what Dr. C said.
Don't listen to the socialists waffle on about.
If they're expressing their offended, all they're doing is telling you how they feel. They don't have to go. They don't have to listen.
Okay, well, here we go. Calling time. Okay, don't all rush to the bar. Who's buying my drink?
Oh, by the way, talking of drink, it was a bit of an arduous weekend at the barbecue, wasn't it? When we were force-fed food and on-tap beer.
And we were forced to drink that Peroni.
Don't rub it in, will you?
I tell you, it was horrible.
Arduous task.
Our thanks to another friend of ours, David Bebbington, and his lovely wife, Fiona, for that. It was a lovely evening. Thank you very much. Anyway, right, shout-outs and shout-downs. Let's be quick about this, gentlemen. Go ahead, Mark. Stats, go ahead.
Better get near the microphone. I'm going to go first. My shout out is to two heroes who were attacked in Hanley as they tried to stop two girls being raped. Now, these two men have been left in hospital with serious injuries, but they've been hailed heroes after stopping the two girls from being raped. I think one of them is actually having his face reconstructed, as the two guys who they stopped from raping the girl battered them both. But without people like this, This will become the norm. I think they're real heroes. Proper heroes.
Yes, indeed.
None of these people, the BAFTAs getting these awards. We want people like this getting awards.
Getting awards. Yeah. Okay, Gazelle, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a shout down again this week. It's for the Police Scotland, who admit failures over the death of a woman left in a crashed car for 3 days after the incident was reported to the police. The force admitted that a police officer at the call handling centre at Bilston failed to record the phone call. And they were spotted 3 days later by a member of the public who reported it again.
Jesus.
That's incredible.
The driver of the car, her boyfriend, he died and she was left there in agony with a brain injury, a broken limbs for 3 days and she died in hospital.
Wow.
I hope there's going to be some accountability for this.
Yeah, well, they've been fined £100,000 for negligence.
Sorry.
That it? Okay.
That's it, yeah.
I'm going to go to the Raven. Go ahead, Raven.
Last week we mentioned from Ellesmere Port, Billy Bridge, who was at the Paralympics. And this week his proud mum is very proud of him because he's managed to get a bronze medal in the wheelchair basketball.
Okay, that's great.
So he's done great.
Dr. C, what's your shout out or shout down, sir?
A shout out for the people in education that have the wisdom to get our children back to school, having missed so much vital learning over the past year or so. Yep. So
very good.
Positive shout out. Yeah.
Well, my shout out is going to be for Chubby Brown, who was my public figure of the week, which I needed to mention.
Oh, there's a petition on. I think it's change.org.
Oh, yes.
Against this, and there was quite a lot of...
A lot of people that were signing up for it.
20 or 30,000, I think.
Well, he is my public figure of the week. So we've come to the end of the show. I can see how sad you are, Steve. I can see how sad you are. Have you got your quote ready? Have you got a quote?
I haven't, actually.
You haven't?
He just makes it up.
So you're going to make it up? All right, so we just miss him out. Okay, let's go. Okay, Gazelle, what's your quote of the week?
Yes, Jonathan, it's I only drink on days beginning with T, which is Tuesday, Thursday, today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
Very good. Stats, what's yours, sir?
Oh, again, I can't beat that, but I'm going to do a quote, and it goes like this. Broken vows are like broken mirrors. They leave those who held them bleeding and staring at fractured images of themselves.
Very good. Ooh, yeah, very good. Yes. Okay, let's go to Dr. C. What's yours, sir?
It's a play on action speaks louder than words, and that is listen to what they say, watch what they do.
Indeed. Well, that's what we got to do with the Raven, because he's a devil, this fella. Go ahead. Go ahead. Quickly, well, come on.
I haven't got a quote. I'm just going to say it's coming up to Christmas. It's early.
Oh, mute.
And I'm simply going to say, make it a special one with all your friends and neighbours. And do something a little bit different. Doesn't have to cost money, but just give out nice messages to all your friends and neighbours.
Do you know what? Thank God he's all over.
Send him a Chubby Brown video.
Yeah, we don't need him on the show now until after Christmas, because he's already telling everybody good luck. Yeah. You know, have a nice Christmas. That's all right. Bye-bye. Okay, bye bye, Steve. Bye.
See you
bye-bye.
In January.
Have a few holes.
Ho 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 ho.
I have to get you a sledge.
Yeah.
I've actually got a Santa outfit.